The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Today I'm joined by Noah Moses, who works at Raiden Solicitors here in St. Albans. And they are, of course, sponsors of The Parents Show, we are delighted to say. Noah, thanks so much for joining us on The Parents Show.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your role at Raiden Solicitors?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm a family lawyer. So I work on cases for parties who are getting divorced, parties who have disagreements about what their children's arrangements will be after they separate, and all sorts of disputes that arise following the breakdown of parties' relationships.
Great. And today we're going to talk specifically about a get, or the get. And that is, for listeners who don't know, that is a Jewish divorce. I would love to hear from you what exactly it is. Tell us the ins and outs of a get. And why is it so important in Jewish marriage and divorce?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the Jewish faith, when parties get married, they sign what's known as a ketubah, which is essentially a marriage contract. And it's governed by the laws of Judaism. And until the get is effectively given by the husband to the wife, that marriage contract stays in force. So without this get, they remain married in the eyes of the Jewish law.
Fantastic. Lovely and simple. Thanks so much, Noah. And can you tell us, how does a get differ from, say, civil divorce?
Yes. So the civil divorce will dissolve the civil marriage. It will have no impact on the religious marriage. So they'll still be married under the Jewish law, even once the civil divorce is granted. Now, the important thing, the distinction between a civil divorce and a get, is that under English law, it's the court who grants the civil divorce. But that's not the case with a get, because with a get, although there is a rabbinical court who oversees the process, it's actually not the court that grants it, but it has to be the husband who grants it to the wife. And the way we explain it is that it must be freely given by the husband and freely received by the wife. So there's two elements there. And I know at the moment, the law obviously changed in April 22. So we're in now a no-fault divorce system. But to give a get, it was never a requirement for there to be any reason for the breakdown of the marriage. It was always just if the husband is willing to give it and the wife is willing to receive it. So that's largely the difference between the civil divorce and the get. The only slight additional difference is that when a woman receives a get, she must wait 92 days before she's free to remarry. But that's not the case under civil law. Under civil law, if once you've got your final divorce order, you can remarry whenever you want.
Brilliant. So what, basically, if you are a Jewish couple married in the UK and you want to get divorced, you effectively need two pieces of paper. You need a get and you need the civil,
yes,
civil,
yes,
divorce,
exactly,
as well.
Yes.
So it's kind of a bit tricky in the sense that you need to double the process.
Yes. The only slight thing that makes it slightly easier is the civil divorce. There are timeframes, which means it takes about 6 months to get from the start, from when you apply for divorce till you get the final divorce order. But with a get, it all can happen in a matter of days, or even, you know, shorter than that. So while it's two separate processes, the get can be applied far sooner and obtained far sooner than the civil divorce. And there's no reason why couples who are divorcing would wait until the final divorce order before getting the get. So yes, it is an extra box to check, but it's not something that will delay the process.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for explaining that. And can you describe the process? What exactly happens when a couple decides to get a get?
Yes. So either party will contact the rabbinical court, which is known as the Beth Din. There will be usually two stages. So the first stage will be just talking to the couple to get all the necessary information, to make sure they have a copy of the marriage contract, to get the names correct. And the second stage is the actual giving of the get. So you can either do it in person, where both parties go on the same day, or you can do it if parties don't want to see each other, which, you know, very often does happen. The husband will go and instruct the person who writes the get, because it's written on a scroll. That will be written. The husband will give it to a representative of his. And then on the same day, the wife will come to collect it. And that is the whole process, and hopefully all very straightforward.
It sounds really straightforward and uncomplicated. So really, the rabbinical court, is that the correct word?
Yeah.
Kind of facilitate. There aren't too many parties involved.
No. So it would only be the Beth Din, the rabbinical court, the two parties themselves. And obviously you need somebody who can write it, because it's a specific scroll that it's written in. And if the parties want a third party to be a representative so they don't have to see each other, then there's that. But that's otherwise it.
Brilliant. Nice and simple.
Yeah.
And does it differ depending on country? Because, I mean, if we're talking about a divorce between maybe a couple that have separated and moved to different countries, or from one country to another country, how does it work across borders?
So there's not really much variation, because the get is governed by the Jewish laws. So that doesn't change if you're, you know, in the UK or in the States. There may be some slight variations between different sects of Judaism. So the Reform movement might be slightly different, but the process is largely the same, regardless of where you are.
Excellent. So really more simple than domestic law, because it kind of crosses all boundaries.
In some ways, yes. Yes.
Now, you mentioned there's a possibility of refusal. So mm-hmm. the husband has to agree to grant the get, and the wife has to agree to accept the get. What happens if that doesn't work?
Yeah, so that is quite tricky, because the get must be freely given and freely received. A get that is given because somebody is compelled to give it actually falls foul of the laws of Judaism. So it's not a valid get. So the difficulty we face is that, you know, when we talk about get refusers in this context, we're often talking about, unfortunately, husbands. I've never heard of a case in which the wife doesn't want to receive the get. I mean, I'm sure it's happened, but I've never come across it before. So when we talk about get refusal, it's generally the husband. The difficulty we face in those circumstances is that there's nothing that anyone can do except for to put pressure on the husband to give the get. And that leads to a situation which is, a woman is considered, the English translation of it, is a chained woman, because she can't remarry. She can't have children with another man who's not her husband. And she's effectively trapped until a sufficient amount of pressure can be put on the husband to get him to give a get.
And pressure shouldn't be put on the husband, so that makes it even trickier again, I guess.
Well, there's a balance to be struck, because there are specific laws that are in place to put pressure on the husband, but not to the extent that he's forced to give it. So he still has to give it voluntarily, but, you know, there are situations in which a husband doesn't want to give it voluntarily, so we have to have recourse to something so that a woman is not chained forever.
Yeah, I hadn't actually heard of the phrase chained in that context. So it's really interesting. And what impact does that have? I mean, you said primarily it is a woman who's waiting rather than the man, in your experience. But what impact does it have on the spouse who's waiting, emotionally, religiously, and even legally? They're in a bit of limbo.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from an emotional perspective, being a get refuser is undoubtedly a form of abuse, because you are continuing to exert control over your spouse beyond the length of the marriage. And it's a very, you know, intimate and personal way to maintain that connection with your spouse, who no longer wants to be connected with you. So it's undoubtedly a form of abuse. And there are various organizations set up to help women in this situation, such as Jewish Women's Aid, because the emotional cost is high and that can't be undermined. And, you know, we can't ignore that women who are going through divorce and are, you know, their husbands are refusing to give them a get often that the implication of that is that they're being difficult with other things. So things like, you know, how the children's arrangements will work, how to split the finances. So it's very often an issue that we can't look at in isolation because it has implications for all those other things. And, you know, religiously, a woman who's chained or you know, doesn't have a get, unfortunately, she can't remarry in the Jewish faith, and she may be able to remarry. I mean, she certainly can remarry under civil law if she's got her civil divorce, but under the Jewish faith, she can't remarry. And not just that, we go even beyond that, that unfortunately, a child who's born to a woman who's married and the child's father is not her husband is considered illegitimate in Jewish law. And that has lifelong implications for that child because they can't participate in certain Jewish procedures and rituals, and they're effectively excluded from a big part of their religious life. So, I mean, the consequences can be really far reaching. So it's, you know, we have to be live to that as you know, the community and organizations and just put in place as many support systems in place for these women.
Yeah. And can the woman still practice her faith? She's still welcome within the Jewish community?
Absolutely, yes. So those two are the only things that a woman is precluded from doing because she's essentially still married. But within, you know, the other aspects of practicing Judaism, she's absolutely free to continue doing that.
And are there protections or solutions being developed to help deal with these kind of situations, to deal with refusals, and what's on the horizon?
Yeah. So in this country, the civil divorce process is that you apply for the divorce. 20 weeks later, you can apply for the conditional order. And then 6 weeks after that, you can apply for the final divorce order. And the final divorce order is what essentially divorces a couple, because until that point, they are still married in the eyes of the law. So one thing a woman can do, and also a husband, but you know, these are very rare cases, but women can apply to the English court to say, I haven't got my get yet, and I want the court to essentially put the final divorce on hold until I get my get. And there is, you know, law supports that for a good reason. So that's a route that is open to a woman. The civil divorce, obviously, without this, it means that the husband can't marry in this country. But the only, you know, slight difficulty with that is, you know, under Jewish law, polygamy is not allowed. So even if he, you know, didn't get his English divorce and therefore couldn't remarry, that situation is not so different to if he had the English divorce but didn't have the religious divorce, because he wouldn't be able to remarry under religious law anyway. The other thing that is becoming a bit more popular, I think, in the States and may become more popular here is what's called a halachic prenup, which is a prenuptial agreement that's done under the laws of Judaism. Now, it doesn't deal with the financial aspect of what would happen to the party's assets when they divorce, or what would happen to children. That is still, you know, kept separate. But what it does do is that both parties commit at the time of the marriage that if they separate, they will cooperate with the giving and receiving of the get. Now, one of the things to entice the husband, I'm saying husband again because that's often the case, to give the get, is that under the prenup, he would be required to pay a certain amount of money to the wife for every day that he doesn't give her the get. And that requirement ceases on the day that the wife is essentially called to the rabbinical court to come and receive the get, because obviously if she doesn't receive it freely, then the husband doesn't need to pay her. So that's something that's becoming more popular in the States and could potentially be something that happens here. Now, I don't think it's ever been tested in English law. So it would be interesting to see how the courts would approach that. But, you know, we really try to do what we can to ensure that women don't end up in this scenario, that they are chained and continue to be abused.
And how well is that being received under Jewish law? The idea that if you don't agree to the get, if the husband doesn't agree to the get, that they have to pay for every day that they don't agree to it. Is it accepted? Can it go ahead?
Yes, it can go ahead. People are implementing these types of agreements. I think within the community, there is a real sense of, you know, husbands can't keep getting away with not giving their wives gets. And that sort of feeds into the type of pressure that can be put on husbands, both by the community, by rabbis within the community. And it's certainly viewed as an unacceptable form of abuse within the community.
That's what I was going to ask you next, actually, is about the Jewish community and how they support somebody who's going through this process. You've kind of touched on it slightly, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about it.
Yeah, so there's unfortunately many organisations who help these women, who lobby for them, who support them financially, such as Jewish Women's Aid. But you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, in every community and wherever abuse is present, people sometimes do turn a blind eye and you know, even worse, sometimes people enable the abuse. So I think within the community, people will try to call it out as much as possible. And where in extreme circumstances, we have pressure that can be put on by the rabbinical court. So they issue what's called a decree, essentially permitting the community to ostracize husbands who will not give their wives a get. So that includes things like, you know, not doing financial business with these men, not permitting the man into, you know, a synagogue, and effectively just cutting him off from community life, because being a get refuser is just, you know, so unacceptable. And there must be things that outside individuals can do to put pressure on these men. So the community really does rally around that. And it has been used in the past quite effectively. And it's, you know, cases of get refusal that the husband refuses to give a get for many, many years. They are few and far between. And usually the pressure that the husband faces does cause him to give the get in the end.
And what about family? What kind of a role can family play on putting pressure on men who refuse to give the get?
Yeah, family can play a very big role. I mean, you know, not in taking sides, but ultimately, if you're on the family of the husband who's refusing to give the get, then certainly the pressure should come from his family, because objectively, it's a wrong thing to do to not give a get. It's abusive, it's controlling, it has an impact not just on the wife, but very often on the children. And just the wider community in general, because, you know, by not getting involved, the community has to get involved. So I think family do have a very important role to play.
And if we're talking about civil divorce versus the get or getting a get, what problems can it cause down the line if you have a civil divorce, but you still can't get the husband to agree to give the get?
Yeah, the main problem is remarriage, because you can't get remarried under Jewish law. And so that applies equally to men and women. And then to women, there's the added disadvantage that they can't have children with another man. So the civil divorce just doesn't have any bearing on that.
Yeah. And can civil courts ever help? I think, you might have actually mentioned this already, but can civil courts ever help move along a get process?
Yes. Yeah, so except for the point about delaying the final divorce order, which is, you know, quite a common thing to do, the court won't shy away from doing that. There have been cases where the court says, you know, the husband has to pay spousal maintenance until they give the get. And that happened quite recently. I think it was in 2019. And the husband in that case actually appealed that decision. And the Court of Appeal said, no, you will pay spousal maintenance until you give the get. And the reasoning for that is quite interesting. It's because the emotional impact it has on a woman not to receive a get is high. And it can, to a certain degree, affect her ability to function and her ability to go out and work. So this is more anecdotal, but a colleague of mine had a case which he successfully argued that until the husband gave the wife a get, she was in such distress that she actually couldn't work. She couldn't focus on anything else because the abuse was, you know, so severe and so overbearing that she just couldn't function. And the court in that case did agree that that the husband should pay some money. And then, you know, naturally arising from that is the question of, if the court says that the money should be paid, is the get then given voluntarily? So, I mean, my response to that, my view is, it is still given voluntarily because you're not forcing the husband to give the get. What you're saying is, you know, until you give the get, you have to pay. If you don't want to give the get for a year, for 2 years, for 10 years, that's, you know, a matter for you. But until that happens, the payments need to be in place. So I think the courts are not afraid to make, you know, harsh orders because the implications of being a chained woman on the mental, emotional, sometimes financial capacity of a woman is so high that, you know, just leaving it as it is just unacceptable.
Thanks, Noah. And I mean, I have to say I've learned a lot today from our discussion. It's been really, really fascinating. And I'm sure it'll be the case for some of our listeners too. Do you think awareness is being raised within Jewish communities and non-Jewish communities about the potential upset that refusal of giving the get is causing to Jewish women, primarily in our communities?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we become more exposed to these things, unfortunately, because, you know, divorce is obviously, particularly in the Jewish community, divorce has increased over the last 10 to 15 years. So with that, there's an increase in get refusal. So I think awareness is definitely on the rise about it. And I think people equipped with the knowledge of, you know, the impact this has on women and the fact that it is a form of abuse, I think people are a lot less likely to want any part of it and, you know, are more willing to put pressure on husbands who refuse to give a get. And, you know, within the wider community, I think, you know, outside of the Jewish community, I think, you know, this is why I'm here today, to tell people about the impact that it has so that it's not undermined. And, you know, people who perhaps work in these types of organizations or people who support women who have been victims of abuse are aware of this type of abuse.
And you've called a spade, Noah. You've said that refusal is tantamount to abuse. And I think it's great that you're speaking out about it. Can you see any reform in the pipeline to help? I mean, the suggestion you had about paying maintenance for every day, that the prenup, that you mentioned, that sounds like something along the right road. Is there anything else in the pipeline that might help with this situation?
I think it's quite tricky because of this requirement that the get is given voluntarily. So we can't have circumstances in which a law is passed forcing husbands to give a get and wives to, you know, participate and cooperate in that process, because that just doesn't comply with the laws of the get. I think we should look at making the law clearer in terms of, you know, like the spousal maintenance point, like the halachic prenup. I think those are things that can change things on the ground. And the more we become, you know, willing to use these tools, then the less this will happen. But ultimately, it's a difficult question as to how we can improve the situation, because I don't think there's one well-rounded answer. But I think, you know, if parties approach it at the early stage in the correct way, hopefully they can avoid any issues later down the line.
And hopefully, yeah, and transform the kind of the trend, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or not even a trend, it's probably too much to say, but really stop it from happening in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other thoughts before we wrap up today, Noah? Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, but thank you very much for having me.
Thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show. It's been really fascinating to talk to you.
Thank you.
Lydia was talking to Noah Moses from Raiden Solicitors, who are the sponsors of The Parents Show.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.